You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Hello and welcome to the Tilehurst End Podcast. My name is Ollie Allen and I'm here with a very different sort of show for you today. Of course, with no football on, the podcast has taken somewhat of a break from its regular schedule. We are, of course, still bringing some exclusive interviews with former Reading players, and there's still a couple of those to come in the next few weeks. But right now, of course, in amongst the coronavirus chaos last week, Reading's financial accounts for 2018-19 were released. So today we're going to be going through those figures, and I'm delighted to say that joining me to help me do so is football finance guru, author of The Price of Football book, and host of The Price of Football podcast. It's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, how's it going?
I'm very good, Ollie. I'm staying indoors, following instructions like the rest of us, and I hope everybody's doing the same and coping as best they can in these troubled times.
Very, very good indeed. I'm very intrigued to find out a bit more about your thoughts on Reading's accounts, because certainly I'm no financial expert myself, but from what the small bits that I have seen, it doesn't make for great reading. So I think this is going to be a learning experience for me more than anyone. But as I said there, we'll delve into sort of the specific aspects of the accounts as we go on. But sort of the headline takeaway from it for me certainly is the £30.1 million loss that Reading in 2018-19, and I say 18-19 because, of course, it's worth remembering that these accounts are up to the 30th of June 2019, so none of the money from this current season is included. But Kieran, just how worrying is that £30 million loss figure? Because it follows on, I think, from a £21 million loss the previous season.
If football was a normal business, I would be very worried. You can't be losing £500,000-£600,000 a week for a business which has been in existence as long as Reading has, without a cause for concern. I think the one consolation that Reading have is that they appear to have owners whose present view is that money is an irrelevance. They want the club to succeed on the pitch, and they are prepared to spend whatever it takes to achieve that. Now, that can be done in the Championship to a degree, until looming upon the horizon will be the iceberg of financial fair play, which I suspect we'll get to a little bit later. So whilst your owners are willing to subsidize those losses, then there's nothing to worry about. Having said that, I don't know enough about the nature of their other businesses. Certainly, I'm familiar with what happened at Aston Villa, who also had Chinese owners. And then the government decided they didn't want money coming across out of China to support a football club in the UK. And the taps were turned off very quickly. And under those circumstances, you would then be far more concerned about Reading's ability to survive, not just in these terrible times at which we're presently experiencing, but in business in general.
Yeah, I think one thing you can't doubt with his owners, certainly from a fan's perspective, is that they have a lot of money, certainly, and that's certainly a positive in itself, because they are clearly willing to invest that money into the club. It's a case of whether the financial fair play regulations, which we'll get onto now, sort of allow that to happen. And how close then are sort of Reading to that FFP line? So I think I was personally the impression that sort of from the brief bit of research that I've done, that clubs could lose no more than £39 million across three seasons, so sort of £30 million per season, but they make it across three seasons for £39 million. And if you take Reading's figures for the last 3 years, that's a £4.7 million profit in 16-17, a £21 million loss in 17-18, and a £30.1 million loss, as we mentioned, in 18-19. That, by my rough calculation, leaves them with around a £46 million loss over those three seasons. Now, that is, of course, pre-tax, but could that be a reason why the club were put under that soft embargo that we all heard about from the EFL last summer?
It could have been a contributory factor. There's no doubt that that Reading's figures are a cause for concern. Yeah. When you calculate your FFP losses, what you're allowed to do is to make some adjustments. So if you've spent money on infrastructure, if you've spent money on women's football, if you've got a community scheme, if you've got an academy scheme, all of those costs are then deducted from your FFP losses to reduce them. So I suspect that Reading will therefore creep within that £39 million limit. Having said that, had it not been for the sale of the Majeski, for the sale of the training grounds, and for the sale of, Aluku, your centre forward?
Yeah.
Had it not been for those transactions, I'm pretty certain that Reading would have significantly exceeded the £39 million limit and probably been on a charge from the EFL, as we've seen with regards to both Derby County and Sheffield Wednesday.
They've certainly come up with some sort of creative ways of trying to balance the books, or trying to reduce the loss, so to speak. But we'll get on to sort of those that setting of the stadium, which is obviously a very contentious topic, in just a minute. But I suppose the main question here is, how are Reading making such a huge loss? Because I think obviously that the glaringly obvious one for me is obviously just skimming through that accounts is that, you know, massive wage bill, which stands at £40.7 million in 2019, which is a £5.4 million increase from the previous year. It doesn't make for great reading in that respect.
No, clearly the owners have they've backed the recruitment team in terms of signing both players and the wages that go along with that. So the wages increased by 15% in the year. The previous year they'd increased by over 20%. So you put those together, then there's an awful lot of money going out of the club during a period in which income has halved, because 2016-17 was the final year in which Reading received broadcast income in the form of parachute payments. So the broadcast income has dropped by over half since then, you know, probably closer to two-thirds. And you put that combination of money coming into the club halving and money going out of the club increasing significantly, and that's a fairly toxic mix. So on the back of that, Reading went from making a profit, as you correctly pointed out, they made a profit in 2017, to the losses that we're seeing today. The main drivers for that is the wage bill. To spend £226 in wages for every £100 that's coming from matchday broadcast and commercial income is a recipe for problems, unless those problems are addressed. And it doesn't seem that they have been addressed. You factor in the cost of transfers as well, and Reading have as mentioned earlier, they've backed the recruitment team in terms of spending money on players, and that leaves absolutely nothing. You've already a deficit before you start to pay to, you know, stick a stamp on a letter to put petrol into the groundsman's mower and switching on the lights during a match to power the floodlights. So it is a cause for concern, especially if there appears to be no significant movement in getting those costs down this year either.
You mentioned the ending of the parachute payments in 16-17. Is it fair to say then that Reading have perhaps the hierarchy sort of struggled to adapt to becoming a normal, so to speak, a normal Championship club once again?
Yes, yeah, so, during the period they had parachute payments, they did start to work on getting the wage bill down. In my opinion, they probably didn't do that aggressively enough. You know, the wages were coming down at a slower rate than income, but at least they were coming down. And then since 2017, that figure's reversed, and it's difficult to see how you can get a wage bill down from £40 million if income's going to be somewhere in the region of 17 or 18. You know, realistically, if you want to break even, that wage bill needs to come down to below £15 million, and there's no way you're going to do that when you've got players on long-term contracts, and the players aren't going to walk away from those contracts. And I think we're going to be in a very complicated transfer market this summer. So I think actually trying to sell players could be a challenge as well.
Indeed. I mean, in terms of other expenses, just going through those accounts, are there any other ones that sort of stand out as a concern for you? I think the one for me was the £1 million for the highest earning director seems an awful lot of money.
Yeah, it does seem very strange, because if you look at the history of Reading's highest paid director, Go back to 2012, which was the year before they were promoted. The highest paid director was on 117 grand. So to go from 117 grand to just over a million in the course of, you know, 6 or 7 years, you know, I think we'd all be happy to be on the 117. I know I would as a teacher. So to see that rate of increase is defying sort of defying logic. If that director had delivered in terms of cutting costs for the club as a whole, in terms of reducing losses, then perhaps you might say that it was justified to a greater degree. But there's no evidence of that, and to, you know, for somebody to get a 60% pay rise when times are tough, you just got to hope that this season they genuinely do deliver in respect of those of the challenges ahead of them.
I think that's the thing going for all these accounts, is that you could almost justify it to a certain extent if you were seeing the results on the pitch and you were seeing the results behind the scenes. But the fact of the matter is that Reading, I think they're 14th in the Championship at this break in play, finished 20th in the Championship last season. So in many ways, this money being spent currently isn't being justified. We'll have a look now then at these, I'll say, creative ways of trying to increase the income, starting with the sale of the training ground for £13 million. And of course, this follows the sale of the Naseke Stadium the previous year for £26.5 million. There's been lots of talk, of course, in the news about this sort of thing. I think the rules changed a couple of years ago to allow clubs to do this, because Derby and Sheffield Wednesday have also both sold their stadiums to owners or associated groups to sort of try and boost their income. And I think both of those sides and Reading are currently being investigated by the EFL for this. Simply put, Kieran, have Reading done anything wrong in doing this?
Well, first of all, from a legal point of view, absolutely not. You can sell an asset of a business to whoever you choose. The problems with regards to Derby and Sheffield Wednesday, and I think the reason why Reading are not going to have too much of a problem with the EFL with regards to this, is that under the financial fair play rules, if you do sell an asset to yourself, it should be at market value. So if you take a look at Reading and the Majeski, they sold it for £26.5 million. You've got Sheffield Wednesday selling Hillsborough for £60 million, and then you've got Derby selling Pride Park for £80 million. Now, I'm not a chartered surveyor. You know, I'm just a teacher. But looking at, I've been to both stadiums. Yes, Pride Park is slightly bigger than the Majeski, but to counterbalance that, Reading are in the Thames Valley. It is a prime area in terms of land prices. So you would think that the value of the land for the Majeski would exceed that of Derby, even if Derby's is a slightly bigger stadium. So the accusations, which appear to have been levelled at both Derby and Sheffield Wednesday, is that they have sold their stadia at prices which don't reflect the market, and in doing so, that's allowed them to comply with FFP, and that's why the EFL are taking a dim view. I think Reading's value at £26.5 million, whilst I think it's crazy from a business point of view to allow this for an FFP perspective, I don't think that Reading will be a problem, because the value of the stadium, it would be, in my view, probably appropriate.
I think if you compare house prices in Reading compared to house prices in Derby, I think you'd be surprised about the level that maybe Reading Stadium should be at. But yeah, I'd go along with that, in the sense that Reading are likely to not be in as much trouble as Sheffield Wednesday or Derby are. Obviously, whilst it might be within those legal guidelines, I mean, how sustainable is that business model then? Because really, after both the sale of both the stadium and the training ground, Reading don't really have, you know, many other assets left to sell aside from the playing staff.
Well, you're absolutely right, Ollie, and this would be my cause for concern. You know, as a fan, you are going to be supporting Reading till you die, and that's perfectly logical. And therefore, your concern is, yes, you'd like them to get promoted, probably not this season, but ideally next season. But if not, you want to make sure that your club will continue to be in existence in 5 years, 10 years. You want to take your kids there. You want to take your grandkids there and so on. If you sell off the club's biggest asset, the biggest asset as far as the accounts are concerned is always going to be the stadium. So what Reading are now committed to do is that from next year onwards or from this year onwards, they're having to pay £1.5 million in rent as for the Majeski, whereas previously, of course, there would have been no cost there. So that's going to increase their costs. That's going to count against FFP in future years and make it what is already a struggle, something which is going to be more difficult. If Reading want to develop the ground, let's say they get into the Premier League and they want to increase the capacity, then there could be complications because the owners could then transfer the Majeski to somebody else and there'll be further complications down there. And we've seen what's happened at West Ham, where you've got a tenant and a landlord who don't necessarily agree with each other. Now, that shouldn't be a problem for Reading at present because the tenant and the landlord are one and the same. But if the club owner gets into financial difficulties, the first thing they're going to do is sell off some of their assets, which could raise money. And therefore, the stadium, I think, would be one of those.
Yeah, I think that's my worry is that I think at the moment, it does seem that these owners are very interested in investing in a football club. But you know, say 3 or 4 years down the line where success on the pitch hasn't been achieved, and certainly the current trajectory, we've finished 20th place 2 years in a row and 14th, as I say, at the moment, success is nowhere near being achieved at the moment. So my worry then is what happens when the owners get, say, bored or disinterested. And sort of from going through the accounts, Karen, does it seem as though that the money that they are spending is a gift, so to speak, or does it seem as though they are going to want that money back at some point?
Well, they're not going to get that money back. There's no way that you can realistically hope to recover the amount that they have invested in the club to date. Even if they tried to sell the club, looking at the prices for clubs in the bottom half of the of the Championship, I think Wigan were sold recently for just under 20 million. We had Barnsley being sold last year when they were in the Championship for around about 20 million. Now, I think Reading would be worth more than that because of the geographical issues that we've already discussed and the fact that they've got a bigger stadium, but you're not going to get 70, 80, 90 million, which you're probably going to need to pay back the owners. So the owners will either have to accept a significant loss should they sell the club, or alternatively they're just going to continue perhaps on a smaller budget, or the ideal scenario is that they keep putting money into the club, but that will be limited by financial fair play.
One other way we have, of course, seen that might be classed as slightly underhand of them trying to get a bit more money in is this loan fee that you mentioned earlier from Beijing Ren, who, of course, also owned by Dai Yong and Dai Ju Lee, and the £3 million that Reading received for that loan fee for Aluko. And again, to some people, that might seem a little bit dodgy. Is that it must be allowed, but it seems slightly underhand.
It is certainly allowed under FIFA rules. If you look at the relationship between Watford and their partner club in Italy, there have been a number of transactions taking place there. If you take a look at Manchester City in terms of what they did with Aaron Moy, they signed Aaron Moy on a free transfer from Melbourne City, who are also owned by the City Group, and then City, without ever playing Aaron Moy, sold him to Huddersfield for $10 million. So this type of thing does take place in terms of transactions between clubs with common ownership. And if you can get away with it, then fine. It does make you feel slightly uncomfortable if at some point in time FIFA decide to tighten up the rules in respect of those clubs which are under common ownership.
Yeah, I mean it's far from the only deal that we've seen. It's the only significant deal in terms of financial money wise in terms of that £3 million fee. But we've seen Ayub Masika, he moved on loan from Beijing Ren to Reading in the January transfer window. Tom Holmes has gone on loan from Reading to KSV. Roeselare, the Belgian club that Dai Ju Lee has a stake in. I think Danzel Gravenberch, I think, also went out there last season as well. So it's certainly a connection they want to keep on building. I think they're trying to bring in a new CEO or a new sort of a technical director to try and sort of guide those transfers, which we also recently saw. Alexandre Matos, the Brazilian, and potentially coming in to do that before he couldn't get his visa. But I think certainly after Masika in the January transfer window. That's certainly something that the owners want to explore. Looking towards the future then, Kieran, we're obviously in a very uncertain time in general at the moment in society, not just in football, with sort of lots of companies unfortunately facing financial peril. In terms of these FFP regulations, do you think there is a chance that potentially the FA or the EFL might relax regulations for this season?
Well, it will very much be an EFL decision. Ultimately, financial fair play is a decision which is made by club owners. So what I think people seem to think that the EFL is independent of the clubs, but ultimately the EFL is owned by the 72 or the 71, as we have at present, members, and they each have a vote when it comes to making key decisions. So what will happen is that Rick Parry and his team, they will make recommendations to the owners, who will then decide whether or not they want to go along with those rules. In terms of what we have in the respect of the 2019-20 season, clubs have got no money coming in. In the Championship, you are more dependent upon match day income than you are in the Premier League. I mean, broadcast income for Reading is around about 40% of the total, whereby if you look at clubs in the Premier League, for many of clubs of a similar sort of nature, you'll be looking at between 80 and 90%. So therefore, because you are more reliant upon match day income, losing those final five or six home matches of the season is going to have a negative impact on the club. Potentially, you might have to give money back to season ticket holders if you can't fulfil fixtures. You might have to give money back to broadcasters as well, because they've advanced money. So you could be heading for a bit of a cash crisis. That is not good. To have normal FFP rules operating under those circumstances is just adding an extra layer of trouble to what are already very troubled waters.
Might we see the season become somewhat of a free hit to a certain extent? I think certainly if, say, some clubs make such a huge loss because of what's happening at the moment, you know, they might very well bring out the excuse that, you know, there was no way they could get that revenue coming in.
Yes, I think many clubs will use that as a rationale for increased losses this season. And therefore, what I think they will respond in doing is that they'll come up with some sort of compromise plan for 2019-20. It could be that they will allow either higher losses, or they'll effectively just sort of expunge this season's financial records from the FFP assessment, and they'll next assess clubs on 2017-2018 and 2018-2019 and 2021. So if we have some formal decision made in that regard, then I think that will help clubs, because at least it will allow them to plan in terms of what's going to happen between now and the 30th of June. Should they be putting their teams into furlough? Should they carry on paying the wages and things of this nature?
Yeah, I think I'd be disappointed if Reading did put their staff on furlough, because I think, considering that astronomical wage that we mentioned earlier, I think it would make an awful lot of sense for the players to take a wage cut. But We'll have to wait and see on that one. I think certainly in terms of, you know, the financial records for the season were almost expunged, as you said, it would certainly probably be a good thing for Reading, because as we said, you know, these accounts of course only cover up to the end of last June, which might then explain, of course, why Reading went on a bit of a mad spending spree late in the transfer window last summer. I think that big money spent on George Puskas, Lucas Shaw, the wages for those two as well, and along with the likes of Raphael, Matt Miazga, Ovie Ejaria, certainly won't have been cheap wage-wise. Did that surprise you at all, that Reading spent so much money quite late on in the window? And would that worry you at all?
Yes, I think I would be concerned, because if you make hurried decisions, you don't always make the best decisions. And you know, there's an old saying, isn't it? You know, decide in haste, repent in leisure. And that's very much an issue in football. If you make the wrong signing and you sign a player on a 3 or 4 year contract and you commit yourself to paying out high wages during that period, it's not just this season that you suffer. It's the fact that at the end of the season, you can't get rid of him. And he doesn't want to go because nobody else is prepared to pay those wages. I've just done some calculations in respect of Reading's wages, and I'm coming up with the average wage for 2019 was £19,400 a week. Now, by championship standards, yeah, that is quite high. It's not hugely high. I think the average is around about 16,000, but it does show that Reading are certainly paying a very competitive level of wages in that division, because that average figure I gave you, remember, includes clubs who are in receipt of parachute payments and all the benefits that they bring. Can Reading continue to pay those levels of wages? It's effectively £1 million a year for the first team squad, your first 18 players. I think that would be a challenge going forwards. And also the challenge would be, how do you get rid of those players when they're on that level of contract?
Yeah, I mean to go from a soft embargo early last summer to spending, I think, about £15 million on Puskás and Zhao combined last summer really seemed to baffle me. And I think really the only players we sold sort of significantly wise was Liam Kelly to Feyenoord and John Daddy Bodvarsson to Millwall. So we didn't really have anyone coming in, and the fact that money was going out was interesting. And we'll have to wait and see, of course, what happens in this coming summer transfer window in terms of who they can manage to get out. But it doesn't make for great reading, as we say. I mean, is there a magical solution to all of this thing, Kieran? Because, you know, we're seeing more and more now in the Championship that clubs are spending millions of pounds, sort of blowing their budgets and sort of going beyond their means to achieve that, you know, fabled dream of getting to the Premier League. And obviously, when only three teams can go up each season, obviously with more often than not at least one of those clubs being a team that's come down from the top flight the year before, it seems more and more teams might end up in a situation like Reading, where they've spent so much money but don't really have very much to show for it.
Unfortunately, I think there has been no indication from club owners that they want to reverse the situation. If you take a look at those clubs that have been in the Championship for most of the last decade, the losses have been horrendous. So you look at Forest and Derby and clubs of that nature, and they've been losing £300,000-£400,000 a week, not just for 1 year, but every week for a decade. Unless there is some form of common sense introduced into the Championship, I can't see that changing. The reason why the clubs have to commit to losing that amount of money is that if they want to be promoted, the only way that you can compete with clubs who are coming down from the Premiership with an immediate £40 million head start, because that's what you're going to get in your first year of parachute payments, is to effectively blow your budget. We have seen sort of a policy for some clubs is that they know that they've got this £39 million over 3 years financial fair play limit. And what they will do is spend austerity. You know, so they'll try to get up in 2 years. And if that doesn't work, they effectively slam the brakes on and try to recover the money in the third year so that they don't breach financial fair play. And then they go again. And that's no way to run a football club. That's no way to run any business from a common sense point of view. But you know, my observation is that if you get involved in a Championship football club, common sense is the first thing that disappears in terms of decision making. The only club that made a profit in 2019 was 2018-19 was Rotherham. And what happened to Rotherham? They were relegated. The club which made the biggest loss in 2018-19 was Aston Villa. Aston Villa were promoted. So we do have this model whereby if you go for broke, if you overspend, then you know you're going to hopefully get promoted, and then the clubs just tend to not worry about the losses when they get to the Premier League. The frightening thing that they find is once they get there, their costs just go through the roof. So although you might be going from TV money of £7 to £8 million a year to £100 million, you'll also find your wage bill has rocketed during that period as well. And of course, the first thing you need to do is to spend £60 or £70 million in the transfer market, unless you do a Norwich and just say, we're going to go up and we're not going to spend any money and we're just going to bank the money and come and be relegated again, which seems to be a bit of mockery. Why put all that effort into getting promoted in the first place?
That's the thing, because I think for me, looking back, obviously Reading got to the playoff final 3 years ago and were two penalty kicks away from getting to the Premier League. And I think a lot of people at the time were saying it was almost a good thing that we lost that final, because we almost weren't ready sort of quality wise on the pitch to get to the Premier League. But I think from my point of view at the time, I think that the financial sort of safety that playing in the Premier League could have provided, you know, even if we were there just for one season, could have been so important.
Yeah, we are seeing different approaches taken by clubs when they're promoted. So, you know, Villa were promoted last season. They spent a fortune trying to sign players. It's not really worked for them. Wolves went up 2 years ago, and I think they've used, you know, Mendes has used his contacts to buy smart, and Wolves have been an absolute delight in the Premier League. They play fantastic football. But if you think about Fulham and Cardiff, you know, they both went up in 2018 and both came down in 2019. So, you know, the chances of surviving in the Premier League aren't great. You know, we have seen last year two promoted teams were relegated. The previous year, I think it was the first time in ages that three sides managed to stay up, and that was Brighton, Newcastle and Huddersfield. But Huddersfield came down last season. If you look at the bottom three places now, we've got Norwich and Villa, both of whom were promoted in 2019. So I think people really have to question, is it worth it? Yes, it's nice to host Manchester United and Chelsea and, you know, these other big clubs from the Premier League. But the financial pain that the club has to go through to get there and then to get, you know, regularly tonked 3-4, 5-0 is questionable.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum, put it that way. I mean, it'll be interesting to see sort of what the summer transfer window holds there, not just for Reading, but for all clubs, because, you know, I think surely Reading have to cut the costs this summer, whether that's going to some of the higher earners, the likes of Chris Gunter, Gareth McCleary, both coming to the end of their contracts, whether it's a case of getting them off the wage bill like they tried to do last summer, or sort of limiting their spending, because really sort of bringing it back to the start of this discussion now, Reading simply can't keep on going on as they are.
No, they will get hit by financial fair play. Remember, financial fair play is based on a rolling 3-year routine. So therefore, Reading's success in 2017, when they made that profit, that's going to dip out of the figures this season. So think about those three losses. We've got £51 million worth of losses in 2018 and 2019. And that's despite, remember, those losses are after selling the Majewski. It's after selling the training ground. It's after doing the unusual loan deals and so on. The losses would have been in the region of £80 million for those 2 years had they not made those unusual transactions. And I suspect that 2020 is going to be a grim year financially as well, because there's no way that the income will have raised. And because Reading did sign players, I mean, they spent £15.2 million in the summer 2019 window. Well, if you're signing players for big fees, they come with big wage bills as well. So I think Reading are in a pretty tough position financially, and they will struggle to sell players for the fees that they would have hoped to receive for them last summer or this winter, because the coronavirus, the consequences of that on the transfer market, it's going to reduce the value of players between 30% and 40% from sort of the calculations that have been to date, because the buying clubs have less money because they've lost out on sponsorship money, they've lost out on match day income, and they might have to rebate some money to the TV companies. And the selling clubs are desperate to sell a lot of the time. You put that into anybody's spreadsheet, and the first thing you say is, well, let's negotiate the prices down because people are desperate to sell. And in a fire sale, you accept the first or the second offer, whereas perhaps previously you might have stuck out for the fourth or the fifth. I don't know whether you saw Sunderland Till I Die this week, but yeah, if you look at Sunderland's signing of Will Grigg, they started off with a £1.5 million bid, yeah, and ended up spending nearly four. Simply because Wigan were in a position where they could knock back those early bids. I don't think that is going to be the case in the present market.
Yeah, that whole scene with Stuart Donald and the head of technical operations or whatever is almost laughable, really, that scene in Sunderland Till I Die. And I'd hate to imagine if there were cameras in Reading's boardroom last summer, some of the fees, and or even when Ron Gawler was CEO, if you put cameras in that boardroom, and I think we'd be even more of a laughing stock than that Will Grigg transfer saga was. But I'm not too sure whether I'm more concerned or less concerned than I was half an hour ago about Reading's finances. But Kieran, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you very much for the invite, and good luck for the rest of the season, and stay safe and stay indoors, folks.
Thank you very much. And of course, you can find Kieran on Twitter at Kieran Maguire, where he's got a whole thread on Reading's accounts, whilst you can find the whole 34-page financial report on Companies House. As I say, keep an eye out for a few podcasts with ex-Reading players coming out over the next couple of weeks. We had one go out with Graham Murty a couple of days ago. Of course, the 106 captain from that side. It's a really, really good listen, so please do go and check that out if you haven't already. As Kieran says, please stay safe, look after yourselves, and come on, you Ars.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.